You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 26 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the fantastic win over Arsenal as Nani takes centre stage. Burgle is the fourth contestant on the Cap Countdown, and the Football Rambles' Luke Moore joins us on the line to preview Portsmouth at home.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Welcome to episode 26 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and yes, I am joined, as I always am, by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are we this week?
Not as good as you. You sound fantastic.
Buzzing after the Arsenal victory. What unbelievable. It was a terrific performance, wasn't it, Dan?
It was brilliant. You can't really argue it really at all. I mean, the way that we just turned up. And we dominated from start to finish. All right, there might have been the odd five-minute flourish where Arsenal looked like they might get a goal back. But, you know, I thought that we played very well and we looked like real title challengers.
I want to stop you right there, right? Before we move on again...
I'm ready for this. I'm ready. Wait.
You ready? I want to ask you a question.
Go for it.
Are you in Team Bridge or in Team Terry?
Well, I think I'm on Team Bridge.
You're on Team Bridge?
Yeah, it's great to see John Terry, like, you know, just failing as usual. I mean, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, could it? I mean, what is he playing out there? I mean, it's not as if, you know, he's going out of a minger. Have you seen her?
She's
hot, you know. I don't see any reason.
Yeah, she's pretty nice. What were you, Steve? Team Bridge, Team Terry?
Go on, and I'll go Team Terry
I'm in Team Terry as well, Steve.
I can't believe you two. No morals whatsoever.
Go on then, let's talk United, guys. Arsenal away, 3-1 victory. Dan, it was absolutely remarkable, wasn't it? And what an unbelievable performance from Nani as well. I mean, where's that come from?
It's confidence, Steve. I mean, as we, you know, we mentioned last few weeks that he's brimming with it at the moment, and you know, people are criticising him for his lack of consistency, but over the last three games, you can't fault it really. I mean, his crossing ability, he's been taking on his men, he's been doing everything you'd want him to. You know, chipped in with a goal, that might have been an own goal, but you know, he still gave the keeper something to do. And that chop, that was pretty amazing what he did. It was, I mean, if Ronaldo does that, we're talking about that for weeks, but that was just, it was sublime really, because I love players that mean skill, if you know what I mean. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing there. There was no fluke about it, knew what he was doing, and then he had the delivery as well. So, I mean, top class, you can't fault the lad. And he got an assist for the second goal, of course.
Yeah, it's about time we got a run in the team as well. I always had faith in Lewis Nani, always.
I'm just a bit concerned now, because what about Valencia? I mean, he's been playing well all season. I mean, he's been one of our best players, arguably. And now Nani turns up, a few good games, and it looks like he's, you know, an automatic choice now.
Well, competition's a good thing. I mean, remember, we've got the Champions League coming up. There's loads of games for Valencia as well. But if Nani's on form and he's playing well on the right side, then keep him there. It's classy.
And Dov, 100 up for Wayne Rooney. Another fantastic performance, wasn't it? And is there really anyone better in Europe at the moment as a striker?
You're struggling to find somebody that's on form like Wayne Rooney is right now, Steve, definitely. Another great display. Another goal. The second goal where he ran the length of the park. Absolutely brilliant. Very reminiscent of our Champions League goal. I do remember last season. It was a great display from him. Led the line well, and everybody says he can't lead the line by himself. He showed against Arsenal that he can. And well, Dan, do you think he's world class yet?
I still stand by what I'm saying. I mean, it was a very good performance. Can't doubt that. I'm not stupid enough to, you know, to completely write that off. It was a brilliant performance. Like you say, held the ball up well. And his link-up play was fantastic, especially for the second goal when, you know, he just laid it off to Nani and he continued his run. But I just think that I'm still stand by my argument. People are thinking that... I don't class him as a striker. So I'm not going to say he's a world-class striker. I know it's a long debate and everything else. But, I mean, he, on form, he's very much one of the best. You can't discard that. But I just think that when he does it in, you know, a latter part of the season, if he does it against AC Milan in the San Siro and stuff like that, then obviously then he'll get labelled world-class. People like Messi and Ronaldo, they do it in the big games, in the massive games, you know. I mentioned to you before, Dov, about, you know, it's really the only top-class team that he's done this against, you know, recently, I would argue.
So you want big teams then?
We all know Wayne Rooney. I mean, he goes through stages where he gets a load of goals, then he'll go through a bit of a dry spell, then he'll get loads of goals again. I mean, if he continues to score, a goal every two games sort of ratio, then, yeah, I will happily label him world-class and put this argument to bed.
Interesting stuff. Steve, just want to ask you, what did you think about the selection of, well, firstly, of Ji-Sung Park, like the sort of the way that the team was set out? Because when I saw the team sheet, I was a bit worried about the side. I was obviously with the Evans and Brown in defence, and then Park on the pitch as well. I was a bit like not really too confident, shall we say.
But he always does perform against Arsenal, doesn't he, Park? I think that was quite a big thing why Ferguson picked him, because he knows he's been a threat against Arsenal in the past. Park would go in there with no fear. Played his normal game, full of energy, and he scored a terrific goal as well. And that goal, I think, was a really big goal in the game as well, because that put us 3-0 up. And, I mean, if Arsenal had scored and it was 2-0 to make it 2-1, then I think it would have been a really, really tense finish. But Park gave us the cushion. I thought he played really well. And, yeah, like you say, you glanced at the team sheet at the start and you sort of thought, is this side good enough to go out there and dominate against Arsenal? And I'm quite surprised we did, to be honest, dominated in the way we did. But yeah, I was really impressed with Park. It sort of moves me quite nicely on to my next question, Dan. I think Andy Gray mentioned it in the commentary. The 4-5-1 system, it worked so effectively, didn't it? And Andy Gray mentioned that possibly Ferguson will sort of look to set up for the rest of the season like that. And I guess he means particularly away against the teams that like to play football, like your Chelseas, your Arsenals. I mean, do you see that happening, that 4-5-1 system staying, especially away from home?
Yeah, he's done it for the last few years as well, though, hasn't he? Especially in Europe, he tends to deploy them tactics. It does work. When it works really well. But then when you have the games where it doesn't sort of click, people say, oh, you know, revert to 4-4-2, it's how we should play and everything else, which there's arguments for both formations. But Berbatov would clearly like to play a 4-4-2, so he's not going to get a look in when it's 4-5-1. So, I mean, I think it depends, like you say, against the opposition. I think we should always go at home 4-4-2, but away from home, you know, if you're looking to hit people on the counter attack, 4-5-1 is perfect.
And Dov, another really solid showing from Johnny Evans. He's really maturing, isn't he? And you might be a bit sort of fearful at the start of the season if you thought, oh, there's going to be no Vidic, no Ferdinand for large parts of the season. You might have thought, cool, can we really sustain a title challenge? But we have done without Ferdinand and Vidic for such prolonged periods of time. And, I mean, does that show that Evans is ready to sort of command a first-team place? I mean, even with the reputations of Ferdinand and Vidic, he should be there by merit.
I think John Evans will start next season as one of the top two centre-backs at the club. I think his form this season has been fantastic, and he was never troubled against Arsenal at all. Won loads of important tackles. Anytime there was a ball lofted over the defence, he was there. It was an absolutely fantastic performance from him. Although it did deflect Vermaelen's shot past Van der Sar, but I mean, we can't hold that against them. But other than that, it was a perfect performance at the back. I would say, like, I want to do one maybe negative on the defence. I didn't feel the fullbacks were quite up to it. I thought Raphael got caught out of position a lot of the time, and Evra, his passing wasn't really up to what normally is. So I don't know, but other than that, I thought John Evans was fantastic at the back.
I think that going back to what you're saying about Evra, I think, do you not think he's getting a bit tired? I mean, he's played nearly every game this season now. That's why we need someone like, you know, John O'Shea. If he wasn't injured, he could just fill in for a few games, you know, just slot in at left back. Mm-hmm. Just take a bit of pressure off Evra. Where's Fabio these days? I mean, he was injured at the beginning, was he? And I think he came back. I mean, is he match fit now?
He played in the reserves, which we shall talk about later. So
okay. You're going to educate me then, are you, Dov?
I am, yes. I always try my best. But yeah, but like, what did you think of Raphael, Dan? Obviously, he's Fabio's brother.
He's still a bit naive, isn't he? When, you know, he tries to win the ball too early, I think, and people can just spin him. But, you know, he'll learn that. That's all about experience, isn't it?
Yeah. One thing I've noticed in the last couple of games, it looks like he's getting bigger. as in putting on some muscle.
His shoulders are getting quite big. I don't know if he's. He does look a little bit like he's been on the weights, which is good because he was very small, wasn't he? So anything to help that would be great. I think he'll be a top class fullback for a few years.
Great stuff. Well, we'll move on to the email section now, guys, before we go on to look at some features. Sean Fields emailed in and just sort of echoed what we've been saying, commended the performances of Nani, Rooney and Evans in particular. And Daniel Lang, he's emailed in and wants to know what we think about the green and gold protests that are going on at the moment. And he asks, would following FC United be a more attractive option given the mounting debt issues at the club?
I'm quite like the green and gold protests. I mean, keep it going. You need to sort of voice your opinion and make yourself heard. The Glazers need to know that the fans aren't happy, and if wearing green and gold is the way that we're going to do that, then we need to do that. Obviously, they never took any notice when effigies were being burned when they took over the club. So maybe instead of buying United merchandise, buying green and gold merchandise, then let's do that. With regard to following FC United, I'm not down for that. They're a different football club. I know they were set up by United fans, but they're not Manchester United. So I think people should support the team and make their opinions heard, and hopefully we get changed that way.
Great. That, Dan, yeah?
Yeah, the only reservation I've got about the green and gold is that it'd take the whole stadium to get involved with it. Otherwise, it's not going to have an impact. You know, it's fine just having a few hundred people doing it, but they're not going to take notice of that anyway, are they? They're on about doing a protest before the AC Milan game, you know, going into the stadium maybe 5-10 minutes after kickoff, just to show the world that it's an empty stadium as a protest, and then go in, obviously, for the remainder of the game. But David Gill came out, didn't he, in the week to say that it's a bit ridiculous having all these protests and we should get behind the team. But, you know, United are a club that, you know, they need the support of the fans, and if they don't have it, then, you know, there's a possibility we could go under, and it's up to us as fans to, you know, to make that point to people that be. Whether or not we'll get taken over by somebody else, I don't know. It's hard to pass judgment when you don't really know, you know, the ins and outs of the club, what's going on behind the scenes.
Sorry, Dan, just talking about the finances, did you read the article that was on the BBC about a consortium getting together of, like, wealthy United fans possibly looking to buy the club?
I don't know. I mean, they could buy the club quite easily if they've got the money, but it's up to the Glazers, you know, whether they'd actually sell. Are they, you know, brave enough to admit they were wrong to buy the club? There's so many different questions that can be posed, you know. It's all well good, you know, saying someone will just buy it, but you need the other person to sell before you can buy.
That was one of the difficulties, obviously. But I mean, it seemed like they had a fair following, and it's not just that sort of talk. They've actually approached various people who are willing to put money in. Obviously, you need to get the Glazers to sell, which, no, I don't think they would, to be honest.
Great stuff. Well, let's move on to Cabbage and Player of the Week now, then, guys. Plenty of players of the week, surely. Cabbage might be a little bit more difficult, but Dov, I'll start with you. Who's your player of the week this week?
It's the Portuguese winger, Luis Nani. A great performance. Loved the chop. Loved the delivery / goal / cross. It was fantastic. A great performance. Setting up Rooney for the second goal. It was unbelievable. Unplayable, even. For me, it was his best performance in a United shirt. He's my player of the week.
Dan?
Personally, I'm going to go with Michael Carrick. I thought that he had a fantastic game in the centre midfield. I think he always plays better within a three-man midfield rather than just being in a two. And I thought that his passing was superb, his movement. He got a few tackles in as well. And his overall distribution of the ball was fantastic. I think he set up, well, he had a hand in the first goal, didn't he? Putting it out wide to Nani. And I think he had a hand in the third goal as well. So I think, all in all, Carrick played really well. Him and Scholes dominated, and Fletcher did his bit as well. But I'm going to go with Michael Carrick. What about you, Steve? I think I know who you're going to go with.
No, I'm with Dov. I'm going with him this week because not only for the reasons that Dov said, I mean, a truly brilliant performance and the goal and the assist for Rooney as well. When you consider that just a few weeks ago we were talking about Nani's career being finished at United, we were saying not too long ago that he just simply wasn't good enough. He never turned up in the big games. He never turned up when he was given a chance. And last couple of games, he's really stood up and been counted, hasn't he? And we thought he was down and out, didn't we? So for him to have recovered and proved that he's still definitely got something to offer, I think it's testament to how much of a good player he is. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Nani this week.
I mean, it's quite similar to Carrick's situation as well, really, because Carrick wasn't really in such good form. he's been playing steadily, but he's not been outstanding. But the last few games against City and against Arsenal, he's been one of our better performers even. So I think that both players deserve a lot of credit, and just hopefully they can, keep the form going.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we go and praise Nani this week, but then next week will he come out and put in another average sort of performance that we've been used to seeing from him, and then it'll be maybe people back to getting on his back again. But credit where it's due at this time. He was superb against Arsenal, so hopefully, like you say, he can keep that up. But what about Cabbage of the Week? Dan, I'll start with you this time.
That's quite tough. I thought Wes Brown did okay, but he was probably one of our worst, worst performers. And I think Raphael maybe as well, but I think I'll go with Wes Brown. I heard reports, though, that he was actually ill through the game, which might have helped hampered his performance, but Arshavin got past him a few times, which, I mean, it's not easy to keep up with Arshavin, I suppose, but yeah, Wes Brown just looked a little bit sluggish. But, he played well, but he was the worst player on the day, I think.
Bob?
I'm going to give Cabbage to Raphael. Not for, like, his performance, it wasn't the best, but the fact that Cliche ran past him and he was trying his best to keep up and he just couldn't do it. So that's why he's getting Cabbage for me, just to see him trying to run his fastest to try and keep up with Cliche, and he just never managed at all. I thought it amused me slightly.
Okay, it's tricky, isn't it? It would either be Wes Brown or Patrice Evra for me. Gov mentioned it a bit earlier on that, especially first half, Evra's passing was not to what it usually what we expect from him. So, yeah, I think I'll give it to Evra for his first half performance. Second half, he was back to normal. Decent performance, but tough week to go out of Cabbage, but Patrice Evra for me.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, guys, it's CAF countdown time now, and we got Fergal coming on for the fourth week of the show. And Dan, I'll leave it to you.
Tonight we're joined by redcafe.net member Fergal on tonight's CAF countdown. So, Fergal, what is your real name, or is it Fergal?
That's my real name, yeah.
Is that your real name? You're brave. Not many people go on the forums with the real names.
Yeah, it was kind of a mistake, because when you Google my real name, Red Cafe comes up a bit too often. So, but yeah, that's my real name. It was named after Sir Alex, so it was it's kind of a variation of it.
No, it's a nice touch. So, what's your greatest United moment?
I don't know. I'd probably, in terms of the last year, maybe Owen's goal in the derby this year. But I'd say in reality, it's it was John Terry's penalty miss, because you knew when he missed that, you knew that it was United.
Well, he's the topic of the week, and it was good to see him falling on his arse a little bit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So do you think we can go on and win the league now, especially after beating Arsenal? So
yeah, I've thought for the last while they would, and I was looking at the odds there. United are 11-5 to win the league this year. I think in all reality, I don't think Chelsea are going to beat Hull, and I don't think they're going to beat Arsenal. I think United are going to be top of the league by the end of next weekend, and I think United will finish it out. I'm convinced United are going to win it this year again.
Well, yeah, I think we'll have quite a good chance to do it. It depends on Chelsea, really, though. We've got to catch up points, haven't we?
Yeah, but it's nice to have them to come to Old Trafford, and I think every player in that United squad has won the league. Everyone's done it, so if United players know how to win the league, I'd be confident United to finish it out.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. All right, then, we'll get cracking. You've got one minute to answer as many questions as you can. The clock starts now. Which foot did Fabian Barthez favour?
Left.
How many FA Cups do United have against their name?
11.
Which rival did Wes Brown make his United debut against?
City.
Who registered the last Premier League goal for United?
Yeah, that Wes Brown was Leeds. Who registered the last Premier League goal against United? It was Park.
Bobby Charlton left United in 1973, 74 or 75?
73.
Who partnered superstar David May in the 1999 FA Cup final?
Ronnie Hansen.
Against whom did Alan Smith net his last United goal?
Roma.
Who did United beat in the final of the 1977 FA Cup final?
Liverpool.
Which United centre-half scored two goals at Anfield in 96-97?
Gary Patterson.
Wow, that was pretty good. You got 8 out of 9. And the one. No, the one you got wrong was number 3, Wes Brown. It was Leeds United at Old Trafford.
I figured that one out after I said it.
That is pretty good going. I'm fairly impressed with that one.
So
I think you're top of the table now. Is that right, Steve?
Nice.
Thanks for that.
That is correct. Fantastic.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Oh, well done. All right. Oh, well, I'm sure we'll be in touch if you end up winning it, and we'll get some prizes to you if you're that lucky.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it's reserves review time now on the RedCafe.net podcast, and Dov's going to bring us news of a victory for the reserves that sends them to the top of the league.
Indeed, Steve. Top of the reserve Premier League. The game was Manchester United against Bolton Wanderers at Moss Lane on the 28th of January, and United won 1-0. It was a hard-fought game against Bolton. Bolton seemed to be a bit rivals in the reserve league. We played each other three times recently as well. Notable players on the team sheet were Fabio, as Dan mentioned earlier on. He started the game, played the full game, played very well. And also one Ben Foster made his first appearance for the reserves. So read into that what you will. It was a strong start from United. They played maybe the better of the two. Over the first half, wasn't really too many chances, but they got the reward just before half-time when a skipper for the day, David Gray, he turned in a Gabriel Obertan cross to make it 1-0. So it was a well-deserved lead for United there. And after the break as well, we could have had a penalty as Fabian Brandy was hauled down in the box, but it wasn't given, unfortunately. Duke, who we thought, well, he came off injured last week, so we thought maybe something a bit serious, but fortunately, it wasn't. He started the game as well, and he had a shot just over the bar. It was Fabio that set him up as well. Bolton's biggest threat came from Ricardo Vaste, the Portuguese striker as well. He forced a good save out of Ben Foster, and other than that, Foster didn't really have much to do. Duke had a couple of chances, but ultimately, it was Gray's goal that won the game for United. So, it was a good performance. Like, Fabio was quite good on the left as well. Ben Foster, a couple of good saves, but not really too much to do. Obertan played very, very well, and so did David Gray, the right back. So, all in all, it was a good performance, and it was a really difficult game for them. And the youngsters, again, have come through with flying colours.
Fantastic stuff. Well, great to see the reserves performing well. And Dov, Legends profile for this week. We had Dwight York last week. Who have you got lined up for us this time?
Well, this week, Steve, I have Norman Whiteside. I don't know if he's maybe young enough to remember him, but he was a great player for United. And one of lost potential, shall we say. He was born on the 7th of May, 1965. In Rathcoole in Northern Ireland, which I believe is very close to Belfast. It was a Northern Ireland international. He played in two World Cups, and also obviously for United and Everton as well. For United, he played in 273 games, scored 66 goals, although there was a sad, tragic end to his career, which we shall go on to later. Obviously, it raised in Belfast, and he was discovered by United scout Bob Bishop, who brought him to United as a youth player in 1979. And he became the youngest player to make his debut since Duncan Edwards, when he made his debut in 1981. The year after that, he played in the League Cup and FA Cup finals, and he was the youngest player to score in both finals, and he also won the FA Cup when we beat Brighton and Hove Albion. Again, he's breaking records everywhere. He broke Pele's record as youngest player to appear in a World Cup when he played for Northern Ireland aged 17 years and 41 days in Spain 1982. In the 1986 World Cup in Mexico, he scored Northern Ireland's only goal in a 1-1 draw against Algeria. And overall for Northern Ireland, he won 38 caps and scored 9 times during his career for them. As a player, he was quite a gritty player, so a very physical type player. Had an eye for goal. He was a very, very skillful player as well. Had a great touch. And he was a fan's favourite at the time as well. And I believe he's still a favourite now. He started off his career as a striker, but really he was brought back basically because he didn't really have the pace to be a striker, I was thought. So obviously he was in the middle of the park and really he controlled games. It was a great, great going forward. In a game in 1987 against Arsenal, Sir Alex Ferguson said Big Norman Whiteside kicked everybody up and down the pitch for 90 minutes and didn't even get booked. And one of his many nicknames was the Shankill Skinhead because of the way he played the game. It was quite aggressive. And a game against Liverpool, which United won 1-0, and it was on Boxing Day in 1986, Sir Alex Ferguson had this to say about him. He says, He had self-assurance that was remarkable in a 21-year-old. The excellence of his technique was an island of composure. Looking up and unhurriedly making his decisions, he rarely surrendered possession and increased angle and weight of his passes so well that the receiver never had to fight the ball. His eyes were as cold as steel, and he displayed the temperament to match. As a player, he was close to the genius category. So, now that is high praise. Like, that, for coming from Sir Alex Ferguson as well, that is very, very high praise. When he signed for United, for a dimension, there was a headline after his 14th birthday that said, "Have United found the new George Best at last?" Again, showing the sort of reputation that the young lad had. As a goal scorer, obviously started his career as a striker. As a goal scorer, he wasn't renowned for the amount of goals he scored, more the way he scored the goals. And in 1985, in the FA Cup final, he scored the winning goal. It was a lovely curling shot from the right-hand side in the 20th minute of extra time to give United, who were down to 10 men, victory over Everton. And this obviously was his second FA Cup winner's medal. Obviously, given his goal against Liverpool and goal against Everton, it was renowned a little bit for scoring goals against teams from Merseyside. And then there was another nickname, the Scourge of the Scousers, which, I don't know, he deserves a medal for that at least. Unfortunately though, his career was cut short. Over his United career, he had about 9 knee operations and he was very, very injury prone. United sold him to Everton in 1989, and he played 29 games for Everton, but at age of only 26, he was actually told to stop playing football, because about one bad tackle could result in him never playing again. So, like, no, exactly, no, nobody wants that. So, he did retire at such a young age. Although, his career after that was, what should we say, quite ironic, given his injury crises and such like. He became a podiatrist. He worked with footballers for a time in all football league clubs. I came up with 88 out of 92 at the time after he qualified from Manchester University. Basically, like, going for, like, treating things like shin splints, sort of flat feet, things like that. And he was given his position by the PFA. After a little while, they stopped. And subsequently, he's opened up his own podiatry practice in Manchester, which he is very, very happy to be doing. I'm going to finish with a quote, not from the great man, but from one of his friends, is Jimmy Nesbitt, the actor. This is the foreword to his autobiography, if anybody's read it, which is called Determined. Foreword says, by Jimmy Nesbitt, "The first time I met Norman, I was speechless, literally. It was in 1993, and I blagged my way to the Players' Lounge at Old Trafford, rambling incessantly to Gary Pastor and Steve Bruce. I was suddenly introduced to the big man and was struck dumbstruck. I wanted to speak. I tried to speak. But the only words that formed in my mind were, 'I love you, Norman. I've always loved you, and I always will.'" So there you go. That is Norman Whiteside. Sadly, his career was cut short, but a great player for the team.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, everybody, it's preview time, and we have a special guest on the redcafe.net podcast. We have Luke Moore of the Football Ramble, and celebrity Pompey fan, can we call you that?
You can, yeah. I'm a bit trained at the moment, but that's fine.
Excellent stuff. Right, we'll get right into it. I want to know what's going on at Portsmouth with regards to your financial situation, because it seems like you're, well, maybe a bit not quite so dissimilar from us. You have absolutely no money, and looks like you might be going down the tubes. Do you think, are you a bit worried about the situation?
Yeah, I've been worried about it for an awful long time. I mean, anyone who's listened to the Football Round will sort of consistently know that I was worried about it sort of even just before Portsmouth won the FA Cup in the middle of 2008. I mean, the players that they had at the club then, which secured them the FA Cup, weren't down in Portsmouth for the harbour views. You know, they're obviously there because they get paid an awful lot of money, and no one knew where the money was coming from. It wasn't coming from the owner of the club. He was securing, basically, what it turned out to be was he was securing an awful lot of loans against the club itself, which they can't obviously pay. So that's why it's all gone wrong. And like someone, I think it was a. Someone like David Connor, the Guardian, said, you know, if you dance with the devil sooner or later, the music's going to stop. And the music has stopped for Portsmouth, and they've not got the luxury of someone like a Leeds United, who at least are a big club. You know, you can sort of, I know they've had a horrible time of it, but at the moment Portsmouth are looking like doing a Leeds United would be the best thing that could happen to them, which is not a great position to be in.
Not at all. And obviously, he's rooted to the bottom of the Premier League table. Do you think, really, like you say, really, it's going to be the best thing that happened? But do you think that it could be the end of Portsmouth as it is at the minute if you do get relegated?
I completely think that Portsmouth could, worst case scenario, actually cease to exist as a club. I think they could be the first club to do what everyone's saying needs to happen for the sort of FA and the powers that be to actually sit up and take notice of the people who are running the clubs in this country. It's not a million miles away in principle from, like you're saying, from the Glazers at Manchester United. You know, it's just Manchester United are luckily such a big brand and such a big club, they can probably always find a buyer. I mean, they're leveraged up to the hill as well. I mean, and so many clubs are that sooner or later it's going to stop. It's got to stop.
Yeah.
And if Portsmouth get relegated, which I think they will, you know, barring... I mean, that's even if they even make it to the end of the season. I mean, that might not even happen. I mean, they've got their winding up here.
Indeed. Right, well, talk about some of the players then that you've got there. You've got there, not very many, but we'll see what you boys have.
It won't take long, will it?
Well, you've lost Kabil and Begovic in the transfer window. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
What do you think? What effect do you think that'll have on a side? Because I hear Kabil was one of the best central defenders to come out of France for a long time. I mean, what's your opinions of him?
I think he is Kabil's colour. When he first signed for Portsmouth, he was a little bit leggy, a little bit sort of big in a way. I mean, he's not quick, the quickest on the turn, but I think he's relished playing a lot of games. So he'll be a loss. But the bottom line was Portsmouth owed a couple of million quid to Spurs from signing him, ironically. So they had to sell him because they couldn't pay that. They're obviously having to sell players to pay the wages at the moment. It's clear to everyone that's what they're doing. I mean, they can't afford to pay the wages otherwise. Mm. So he'll be a loss because he's probably the best defender at the club, I'd say. Well, he was. And Begovic is a wonderful keeper. He's probably, for my money, one of the best young keepers in the country. So for him to go as well is a shame. But, I mean, you know, there's nothing else that can be done. They need to sell, they need to pay wages.
Yeah, and who are some of the more dangerous attacking threats that you have in the side?
They're not really that dangerous in the same way that sort of Manchester United are dangerous, mate. I don't think you're too much to worry about ahead of the game this weekend. I mean, Johnny Tacker's okay through the middle when he's playing through the middle. He's got a lot of pace. He can open up defences sometimes. I mean, if he had to open up Wes Brown, that's for sure. I don't know. You know, he's got okay midfield. If Emmanuel Fernandez deal has gone through, like I think it has, then Portsmouth midfield will be, you know, Kevin Prince-Boateng, who's good with the ball at his feet. Jamie O'Hara's pretty industrious, pretty good. Emmanuel Fernandez, if he can adjust, and it's a baptism of fire for him, if he can play well. They've got an okay midfield. But, you know, I don't think there's anything really that Manchester United need to be worried about. I mean, interestingly enough, actually, I think that teams are having more success against Manchester United than they come out and attack them this season, which hasn't really been any pace over the last few years. It was always a sort of parking the bus and hoping to get a draw, but teams that attack United seem to have a bit more joy. So maybe Pompey will try and do that, I don't know. But
Your prediction will be quite interesting. I'll ask you that in a second. But before we do that, if you could have any Manchester United player, money no object, ironically, who would it be?
And that's what their wages.
I would take anyone apart from
Wes Brown.
Really? Wes Brown's a top class
defender. that's your opinion. No, I think the obvious one would be Rooney. Nani's looked quite good the last couple of games, actually. He looks like he's turning into the player that everyone thinks he will be.
Yeah, that's been something I've been very, very pleased about.
He was great at the weekend against Arsenal, wasn't he? He really did play well. And he's been playing well for the last four games, in my opinion, actually.
Yeah, it was indeed. Right, before we let you go, we just got to ask you one more question. A prediction for the weekend. Do you think you can get anything at all at Old Trafford?
Well, the world record result is, I think, 39-0. I think that might be safe, but only just. And I think Pompey will probably get hit 3 or 4, I expect. I think they'll probably lose 3, yeah, maybe 4. I can't see Pompey scoring either.
Excellent stuff. That makes me a very, very happy Manchester United fan. I'll tell you that much. But
you got to admit, you're not exactly quite good at the sort of playing sports at home, are you?
Not really, not at all. I guess to be positive. but I want to make you feel good, though. I don't want to make it all doom and gloom.
I'm just sort of taken to sort of avoiding football at the moment. I don't want to sort of take in any Pompey game. I mean, I watched them against Manchester City, and that was hard enough. We managed to just about not disgrace ourselves then. So they're hopefully the same at Old Trafford. I mean, actually, remember when Pompey went to Man United in the season they won the FA Cup and absolutely destroyed them?
Yeah, I try and forget that one. It's really...
I think that was the most one-sided ridiculous 1-0 defeat I've ever seen.
I was
the very way you get a repeat of that, who knows? Rio Ferdinand back in goal, that'd be me.
Well, so you're lucky John O'Shea's not playing, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I feel very lucky actually, yeah.
Great stuff. Well, I'm gonna let you go there, Luke, but thank you very much for coming on the Red Cafe.net podcast. Congratulations on your Soccer Lens Awards as well. Very well earned.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me. And thanks to the rest of the board as well. And enjoy the rest of the season. Cheers.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, that was the thoughts of our opposition fan of this week, which was Luke Moore. If you want to hear more from Luke and the Football Ramble, do check out thefootballramble.com. It is a fantastic podcast. So do head over there and give it a listen. Well, guys, let's do a little preview of our own for Portsmouth at home on Saturday. Dan, they've only won once away in the league all season, so with all sorts of financial problems as well, it should be a pretty straightforward 3 points, shouldn't it? And do you expect Ferguson to revert back to 4-4-2?
Yeah, I think he will do, with us being at home. I think we should, no disrespect to Portsmouth, but I think we should try and get the goal difference, you know, to good use. I think we should get, like the fans said, I think we should get at least 3 or 4, hopefully. Like I say, you know, it's very reminiscent of the whole game. If we get a nice early goal, it should settle us down a little bit. Hopefully, we won't have to wait too long for the second, though. But I think we should be able to win that game. I'd be very surprised if we didn't.
And Dov, you thinking Berbatov and Rooney back up front?
I think he might go with a little bit of a weakened team, giving some people a rest. I think I really want Michael Owen to get a couple of starts just to give him a little chance up front. I think what we said about Evra earlier on, looking maybe a little bit tired, I think Fabio might get a little game as well, given his good performance for the reserves. So I'd like to see a little bit of a, not a complete young team, but maybe a couple of the sort of fringe first team players getting a game, because Portsmouth are terrible.
Dan, saying 3 or 4, would you go along with that?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think so. I think Luke said it as well. He can maybe foresee a bit of a cricket score, and I think we'll be looking to up our goal difference a little bit as well.
Fantastic stuff. I certainly hope so. Well, that is the end of episode 26 of the redcafe.net podcast. Do send all your feedback, comments and any other questions you might have for us to podcast@redcafe.net. Get on the Facebook group too if you haven't done that already, and we'll see you next week.